Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Tonight, Monday, the 10th of May, 2010, with another exciting broadcast. Tonight will be part two on the art and science of covered writing. But first, if you'd like to write the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time, or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com, that's hourofthetime.com, and the studio in Arizona, 928-333-2942, and in Canada, 613-733-4324. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask and share productive comments and questions, share research, inquire about the operation, or send hate mail, you can write me directly at hourofthetime@hotmail.com. That's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget that the Hour of the Time is listener-supported, and without your support, we can't expand our coverage and our base, like our current goal of the new shortwave transmitter. We also can't continue the speaking engagements and conferences and broadcasting in general and websites. So, we are listener-supported. Go to the hourofthetime.com, then go to the Hot Shop, and there you'll find hundreds and hundreds of items, individual MP3 files, collections that are of topical interest, PDF categories, DVD presentations, etc. Now, ladies and gentlemen, after this musical break, be prepared to take notes again, because we're going to continue on with lots of definitions and numbers and dates, etc. And I want you to get this information as best as possible. And tonight, if you email me why this broadcast is new and live, Monday the 10th of May, 2010, I will send you one of those books that is on the must-read list that people have asked me for before, and I've sent it to them in the past. When they say, what's a suggested reading list? This is an older book. In fact, what is it? It's 52 years old now. Pawns in the Game. I will send you that book on gratis via email if you email me tonight and ask for Pawns in the Game. And that's kind of our thanks to you for tuning in live and being part of the solution, not part of the infotainment industry. We'll be right back. ladies and gentlemen. Your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. The website, hourofthetime.com, and my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Tonight's special offer is one of those must-read books on that list when people write me. Pawns in the Game. Email me tonight while this broadcast is new and live, and I will send you that PDF on gratis as a thanks to you for being part of the solution and tuning in. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue on where we had left off in the previous broadcast on the art and science of covered writing concerning steganography. And we left off in the digital file world or digital steganography techniques. The next one on your list of notes, blog steganography. Messages are fractionalized and the encrypted pieces are added as comments or orphaned weblogs or pin boards on social network platforms. In this case, the selection of blogs is the symmetric key that sender and recipient are using. The carrier of the hidden message is the whole blogosphere. And then there's steganophony. Is the concealment of messages in voiceover IP conversations, for example, in delayed or corrupted packets normally ignored by the receiver or in unused header fields. There are several characteristics of sound that can be altered in ways that are indiscernible to human senses, and these slight alterations, such as tiny shifts in phase angle, speech cadence, and frequency, can transport hidden information. Now, ladies and gentlemen, one of the other big areas is the digital image and audio. Many common digital steganography techniques employ graphical images or audio files as the carrier medium. Special tools or skills to hide messages in digital files using variances of the null cipher are not necessary. An image or text block can be hidden under another image in a PowerPoint file, for example. Text files can be secretly embedded in ordinarily image files. Messages can be hidden in the properties of a Word file. Messages can be hidden in comments and web pages or in other formatting vagaries that are ignored by browsers. Text can be hidden as line art in a document by putting the text in the same color as the background and placing another drawing in the foreground. The recipient could retrieve the hidden text by changing its color. These are decidedly low-tech mechanisms, but they can be very effective. Digital carrier methods, and there are many ways in which messages can be hidden in digital media. Digital forensics examiners are familiar with data that remains in the file slack or unallocated space as the remnants of previous files, and programs can be written to access slack and unallocated space directly. Small amounts of data can also be hidden in the unused portion of file headers. Information can also be hidden on a hard drive in a secret partition. A hidden partition will not be seen under normal circumstances, although disk configuration and other tools might allow complete access to the hidden partition. A hidden file system is particularly interesting because it protects the user from being inextricably tied to certain information on their hard drive. This form of plausible deniability allows a user to claim to not be in possession of certain information or to claim that certain events never occurred. Under this system, users can hide the number of files on the drive, guarantee the secrecy of the file's contents, and not disrupt non-hidden files by the removal of the steganography file driver. Nevertheless, image and audio files remain the easiest and most common carrier media on the Internet because of the plethora of potential carrier files already in existence. The ability to create an infinite number of new carrier files and the easy access to steganography software that will operate on these carriers also lends to that. Ladies and gentlemen, let's take a look at cryptograms and symbolic philosophies. For no discussion of steganography would be complete without a section devoted to the consideration of symbology. The use of ciphers has long been recognized as indispensable in military and diplomatic circles. But the modern world has overlooked the important role played by cryptography in literature and philosophy. In the art of deciphering cryptograms could be made more popular, it would result in the discovery of much skill and cunning possessed by both ancient and medieval philosophers. It would prove that many apparently verbose and rambling authors were wordy for the sake of concealing words. Ciphers are hidden in the most subtle manner. They may be concealed in the watermark of the paper upon which a book is printed. They may be bound into the covers of ancient books. They may be hidden under imperfect pagination. They may be extracted from the first letter of words or the first words of sentences. They may be artfully concealed in mathematical equations or in apparently unintelligible characters. They may be extracted from the jargon of clowns or revealed by heat as having been written in invisible ink. They may be word ciphers, letter ciphers, or apparently ambiguous statements whose meaning could be understood only by repeated careful readings. They may be discovered in the elaborately illuminated initial letters of early books, or they may be revealed by a process of counting words and letters themselves. If those interested in Freemasonic research, for example, would give serious consideration to this subject, they might find in books and manuscripts of the 16th and 17th centuries the information necessary to bridge the gap in Masonic history that now exists between the mysteries of the ancient world and the craft masonry of the last three centuries. The arcana of the ancient mysteries was never revealed to the profane except through the media of symbols. Symbolism fulfilled the dual office of concealing the sacred truths of the uninitiated from the uninitiated, and revealing them to those qualified to understand the symbols. According to the priest of the mystery schools, the wise pierce the veil and with clearer vision contemplate the reality, but the ignorant, unable to distinguish between the false and the true, behold the universe of symbols. They say that nature, whom they call the Great Mother, is ever tracing strange characters upon the surface of things, but only to her eldest and wisest sons, as a reward for their faith and devotion, does she reveal the cryptic alphabet, which is a key to the import of these tracings. Thank you. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the hour of the time. Tonight, Monday the 10th of May, 2010, with another broadcast here, The Art and Science of Covered Writing, Part 2. Don't forget to email for that free research offer, one of those must-read books on the list many of you have asked me for before. Pawns in the Game. Email me tonight why this broadcast is new and live, and I'll send that to you in PDF. And ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, the Hour of the Time is listener-supported. Go to the website, hourofthetime.com, and then go to the Hot Shop. There you'll find numerous MP3 files and individual, also sets that are bundled together by topical interest or category, PDFs, DVD presentations, etc. And ladies and gentlemen, we still need more Hot Club members to make this next phase in our operation move forward. So if you're not a member of the Hot Club yet, you need to get on board now. It's plain and simple. The temples of the ancient mysteries evolve their own sacred languages, known only to their initiates and never spoken save in the sanctuary. The Lumen priest considered it sacrilege to discuss what they considered the sacred truths of the higher worlds of the divine verities of eternal nature, in the same tongue as they used by the profane. They believed that a sacred science must be couched in a sacred language. Secret alphabets were also invented, and whenever the secrets of the wise were committed to writing, characters meaningless to the uninformed were employed. Such forms of writing were called sacred or hermetic alphabets. Some, such as the famous angelic writing, are still retained in the higher degrees of Freemasonry. However, secret alphabets were not entirely satisfactory. Again, we return to the fundamental weakness of cryptography. Although they rendered unintelligible the true nature of the writings, their very presence disclosed the fact of concealed information, which the priests also sought to conceal. Through various means, the keys to these secret alphabets were eventually acquired, and the contents of the documents revealed to those the illumined ones considered unworthy. This necessitated employment of more subtle methods of concealment. The result was the appearance of cryptic systems of writing designed to conceal the presence of both the message and the cryptogram. Today, this is known as steganography. Having thus devised a method of transmitting their secrets to posterity, the Illuminati encouraged the circulation of certain documents specially prepared through incorporating into them ciphers containing the deepest secrets of mysticism and philosophy. Thus, medieval philosophers disseminated their theories throughout Europe without evoking suspicion. Since volumes containing these cryptograms could be subjected to the closest scrutiny without revealing the presence of the hidden message. During the Middle Ages, scores of writers, members of secret political or religious organizations, published books containing ciphers. Secret writing became a fad. Every European court had its own diplomatic cipher, and the intelligentsia vied with one another in devising curious and complicated cryptograms. The literature, for instance, of the 15th, 16th, and 17th centuries is permeated with ciphers, few of which have been decoded. Many of the scientists and philosophers of this period dared not publish their findings, and in order to preserve the fruit of their intellectual labors, they concealed their discoveries in ciphers, trusting that future generations would eventually discover them. Many churchmen, it is interesting to note, use cryptograms, fearing excommunication or a worse fate should their scientific research be suspected. In spite of the rapid progress made by science in the last 250 years, it still remains ignorant concerning many of the original discoveries made by medieval investigators. The only record of these important findings is that contained in the cryptograms of the volumes which they published. While many authors have written on the subject of cryptography, the books most valuable to students of philosophy and religion are Polygraphia and Steganographia by Trithemesius, Abbot of Spanheim, Mercury or the Second and Swift Messenger by John Wilkins, Bishop of Chester, and Cryptomenetices by Gustavus Salinas. Now, those first two books, ladies and gentlemen, we discuss their origins and history, Polygraphia and Steganographia, in the first episode of this series. And the new books for your reading list would be Abbot of Spanheim, Mercury, or the Secret and Swift Messenger by John Wilkins, Bishop of Chester. So I hope you wrote those down. The mystics, ladies and gentlemen, of the Middle Ages, borrowing the terminology of the various arts and sciences, evolved a system of cryptography which concealed what they believed to be the secrets of the human soul under terms generally applied to chemistry, biology, astronomy, botany, and physiology. Ciphers of this nature can only be decoded by individuals versed in the deep philosophic principles upon which these medieval mystics based their theories of life. Much information relating to their theories of the invisible nature of man is concealed under what seemed to be chemical experiments or scientific speculations. Therefore, every student of symbolism and philosophy should be reasonably well acquainted with the underlying principles of cryptography. Discrimination and observation are indispensable to the seeker of knowledge, and few areas of study are equal to cryptography as a means of stimulating these patterns and powers. Now, ladies and gentlemen, after this musical break, we'll go into some countermeasures, if you will, and some other writings that I want you to take notes on. Thank you. and gentlemen, you're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona. Tonight, the 10th of May, 2010, Monday, with part two in the art and science of covered writing. Now, don't forget, we're listener-supported, ladies and gentlemen. Go to the website, hourofthetime.com, and then go to the Hot Shop to see hundreds and hundreds of items available to you, and that's the better way, because then for your donation, you receive research material that's useful to you and your goals of becoming more independent and more solution-oriented. That's the goals of Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen. Solution-oriented programming. The time of preaching to the choir and whining and yelling through bullhorns is done, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who like those vagaries can go ahead and go elsewhere. Just realize that ultimately you will have been part of the problem all along. And also email me, hourofthetime@hotmail.com this evening for pawns in the game. Reference that in your email, and I'll send you one of those must-read books out there from a long time ago, for many of you at least. Now, countermeasures. This would be a new category, if you will, or topical heading. Countermeasures. An allegory called The Prisoner's Problem is often used to illustrate the process of countering steganography, although it was originally introduced to describe a cryptography scenario. The problem involves two prisoners, Alice and Bob, who were locked in separate prison cells and wished to communicate some secret plan to each other. Alice and Bob are allowed to exchange messages with each other, but William, the warden, can read all the messages. Alice and Bob know that William will terminate the communications if he discovers the secret channel. William, who is the warden, can act in either a passive or active mode. In the passive warden model, William examines each message and determines whether to forward the message or not based on his ability to detect a hidden message. In the active warden model, William can modify messages if he wishes. A cautious or malicious warden might actually modify all messages in an attempt to disrupt any covert channel so that Alice and Bob would need to use a very robust steganography method. The difficulty of the warden's task will depend largely on the complexity of the steganography algorithm and the amount of the warden's prior knowledge. When all is said and done, even in a highly controlled environment, such as a prison, it is extremely difficult to counter steganography communications. And in an open environment, it is almost impossible. While the warden in a prison has the luxury of overseeing all communications that pass through his jurisdiction, law enforcement and security agencies in the outside world have no such access. The countermeasures available to the prison warden simply do not exist in today's society. And although the powers that be are working hard to change that, they probably never will. Asymmetrical warfare. As we have seen, steganography has many valuable applications. But ultimately, it finds its true value in its oldest use on the battlefield of information security. Steganography is ideally suited for use by intelligence agencies, underground resistance movements, secret societies, and other clandestine operatives in need of safeguarding, concealing, and covertly transferring information. For example, information gathered about an adversary's military activities or capabilities must be transmitted carefully and secretly to preserve the friendly force's ability to predict, counter, or neutralize them. Understanding the concept and use of steganography techniques or steganographic techniques will allow intelligence operatives to maintain the confidentiality of valuable information and protect data from possible sabotage, theft, and unauthored or unauthorized viewing. By using steganography in any form, individual operatives, organizations, or government agencies may send messages to agents in the field to give them instructions or exchange information. Similarly, agents will be able to communicate back, as well as with each other, without attracting the attention of a third party. There are countless possibilities and potential variations of how this can be done. Let's take just one example. Digital steganography is perfect for an electronic dead drop. In the FBI affidavit against infamous double agent and traitor Robert Hansen, the former FBI chief of counterintelligence, it explains how Hansen communicated with his Russian handlers. They never met face to face. They would leave messages, money, and documents for one another in plastic garbage bags under a bridge. Hansen's handler would leave a signal in a public place, a chalk mark on a signpost, to indicate a waiting package. Hansen would then collect the package. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a dead drop. Dead drop. It has many advantages over a face-to-face meeting. One, the two parties are never seen together. Second, the two parties don't have to coordinate a rendezvous. Third, and most importantly, one party doesn't even have to know who the other one is. This is a definite advantage if one of them is captured. Dead drops can be used to facilitate completely anonymous, asynchronous communications. There are several ways to build a dead drop into cyberspace. For example, using steganography to embed a message in an image and posting it to a Usenet news group or other online forum is a cyberspace equivalent of a dead drop. To everyone else, it's just a picture. But to the receiver, there's a hidden message waiting to be extracted. To make it work in practice, all that is needed is to set up some sort of coded signal. Just as Hansen knew to collect his package when he saw the chalk mark, an operative will need to know to look for his messages. Obviously, he or she can't be expected to search every picture. There are various ways to communicate a signal. A timestamp on the message. an uncommon word in the subject line, etc. Again, the possibilities are virtually limitless. And again, ladies and gentlemen, we encourage you to be creative. The effect is that the sender can transmit a message without ever communicating directly with the recipients. There is no email between them, no remote logins, no instant messages. All that exists is a picture posted to a public forum and then downloaded by anyone directed or enticed to do so. Consider, for example, ladies and gentlemen, the following hypothetical scenario. By pre-agreement with members of an underground resistance organization, a member or leader puts an item for sale on eBay every Monday and posts a photograph of the item. The item for sale is legitimate. Bids are accepted. Money is collected. And items are dutifully delivered. But at the same prearranged time during the week, a version of the photograph is posted that contains a hidden message. The group members know when that time is and download the weekly message. Unless these people are under active and intense investigation, it is doubtful that anyone will notice this activity. This scenario, or one like it, is a viable, simple, and highly secure method for underground sales to communicate. Counterintelligence. There are ways of finding steganographic messages, most of which involve looking for changes in traffic patterns. However, in the end, there is very little that can be done to detect and counter steganographic communications. Dead drops, both real and virtual, simply cannot be prevented, and law enforcement generally has absolutely no way of knowing when and where steganography has been used or the encryption algorithm that has been employed. After the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001, a number of articles appeared suggesting that terrorists were communicating through steganography. In partial response to these reports, several attempts were made to ascertain the presence of steganographic images on the Internet. One well-known study searched more than 3 million JPEG images on eBay and Usenet archives. 1 to 2% of the images were found to be suspicious, but no hidden messages were ever recovered. Another study examined several hundred thousand images from a random set of websites and obtained similar results. Although these projects provided a framework for searching a website for steganographic images, no conclusions can be drawn from them about steganographic images on the Internet. There are very few hard statistics about the frequency with which steganographic software or media are discovered by law enforcement officials in the course of computer forensics analysis. Anecdotal evidence suggests, however, that many computer forensics examiners do not routinely search for steganographic software, and many might not recognize such tools if they found them. According to a 2004 FBI report on steganography, the U.S. Department of Justice search and seizure guidelines for digital evidence, quote, barely mention steganography, end quote, and the tools that are employed to detect steganographic software, quote, are often inadequate, end quote. Even if the presence of a hidden message was detected, recovery of the message itself adds an entirely new layer of complexity. Recovering the message would require knowledge of, or an estimate of, the message length and possibly an encryption key and knowledge of the crypto algorithm used to encode it. The use of numerous layers and methods of encryption is a secret communique present, a nightmare scenario for counterintelligence personnel.
Like a Russian. Maybe he's a spy.
and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. Tonight, Monday, May the 10th, 2010, and we are in on the second part, and actually the final part, it's a two-part audio, on the art and science of covered writing. And I hope you heeded this message, ladies and gentlemen, and heeded it well. It's there to be used and is being used against you. Now don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is listener supported. And through your support, via donations for research materials or outright donations, is how we maintain our presence in our audio streams, our website, our speaking engagements, conferences, and so forth. Go to the website, hourofthetime.com, and then go to the Hot Shop, where you'll find hundreds of items for your research library. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are an infinite number of steganography applications. So far, we have only explored a tiny fraction of this ancient art. Steganography pertains to a vast many forms of media. The list can go on and on and on. The intelligence community, law enforcement agencies, and the national security apparatus will no doubt continue improving their capabilities. And eventually, they may succeed in developing an effective means of dealing with this issue. But for the time being, steganography is an excellent, highly secure way to communicate sensitive information and is likely to stay that way for quite some time. From ancient Greece to modern day America, people have had the need to hide information. Wars have been waged with the use of information concealed by the techniques we have been discussing. As information technology progresses, these techniques will continue to grow and more complex forms will develop. 10 years ago, very few people even knew of the term steganography, and fewer yet knew what it would mean to society. Today, anyone from a young child to a professional espionage agent can easily create a hidden file for only a select few people to view. Digital steganography encryption does not require a supercomputer or a mathematical scientist to perform. If a person can run a computer with a word processor, that same person can perform advanced steganography. There are many good reasons for hiding and securing information. Regardless of the motivation, the technology is easy to use and difficult to detect. The more that you know about its features and functionality, the more ahead you will be in the game. Your future, ladies and gentlemen, and the future of freedom may depend on it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that was the conclusion of this two-part broadcast, if you will, on the art and science of covered writing. And I hope you took note of that, and I hope many of you conference attendees are making some connections more and more than you even did during the week, anytime you've attended a conference. Ladies and gentlemen, the website, hourofthetime.com. My personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. And that's where you can write for tonight's wireless broadcast is new and live Monday, the 10th of May, 2010, for your free PDF offer. That's our thanks to you for being part of the solution, a proactive solution to restore freedom in our republic here and freedom all around the world. And don't forget, we're listener supported. And if you'd like to call, the studio number in Arizona is 928-333-2942. 928-333-2942. And the studio in Canada, 613-733-4324. That's 613-733-4324. And ladies and gentlemen, at this point, I have not received any emails that I thought I might receive during this series, either tonight or on Friday's first installment, concerning pictures on websites. I hope everyone, ladies and gentlemen, has a safe and a studious evening.
Russian. Maybe he's a spy.